is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get ideas for planting beds and creating focal points in landscape design that also works in concert with the natural environment. As gardeners make seed buying orders and gather ideas, call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kyle Cranches is president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association and co-owner of Lang Landscape in Black Creek in Outagamie County. Kyle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So what types of landscape projects are customers inquiring about?
Customers are inquiring about an array of different projects. So common landscaping projects that we get contacted about are foundation planting beds, outdoor kitchens, say shade structures, which would include pergolas or decks, retaining walls, patios, some walkways, fire features, water features, and low voltage lighting.
That's a wide array of construction projects.
It sure is.
Do you think, is it based on trends or is it based on climate? Do you see any patterns?
Yeah, so the pattern that we've been really experiencing is a big focus on outdoor spaces. So I call them outdoor living spaces, which include, you know, grills and patios and structures.
Grills and patios and structures. So certainly that outdoor or quasi-outdoor kitchen effect. You know, I think about outdoor kitchens in really warm environments, maybe more in the South. But do you feel like outdoor kitchens are becoming more prevalent here in colder climates?
Yeah, I think they're gaining more popularity just because, you know, being in Wisconsin, we have a shorter season to enjoy them. So you know, we are outdoors when it is nice. It seems like the climate's changing a little bit too, and the seasons are getting to be a little bit longer.
What are your challenges in building an outdoor kitchen?
I think the biggest challenge is budget. You know, just trying to bring these key elements into somebody's outdoor living space can be challenging just from a budget standpoint. You're dealing with freeze-thaw cycles, so things need to be set on the proper base. Installing things on the proper base is, you know, a challenge, and it also is kind of expensive in doing so.
And I would imagine all of the materials you use have to really withstand a wide range of temperatures and precipitation.
Yeah, they really do. So that leads, you know, countertops outside.
I was thinking of those countertops.
yeah, countertops. So, I mean, there's natural stone, concrete options, also granite as well. So, yes, these materials need to be, you know, solid, sturdy, be able to handle the freeze-thaw, the environment of snow and ice. So,
we're talking about outdoor landscaping and projects in the works. Kyle Cranches is with us, president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association. And you can call in with your questions, your ideas at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So what are your favorite projects that come your way? What are your favorite projects to work on, Kyle?
So I like challenging projects, but my favorite projects have both a fire element and a water element to the project. So, yeah, those are my favorite projects, bringing fire and water into someone's landscape.
And where should people start if they're planning to do a landscaping project themselves? What are those fundamental steps?
Fundamental steps is just you know, be familiar with codes or ordinances. You know, make sure that the elements are far enough away from your house or your foundation. Do research. You know, make sure you kind of know the steps. Get familiar with base preparation and just, you know, watch videos. You know, there's tons of information out on the websites now. Just familiarize yourself before purchasing materials and starting the project.
And there are new materials on the market, and you're finding some new plants as well. What is coming to market? What are some new uses in landscaping?
Yeah, so big things that are kind of coming to market is just use of new technology, plants. Plants are constantly changing. There's different cultivars coming out every year. A big focus on smaller plants, native plants. For building materials, every year manufacturers are coming up with different block pavers that have different textures to them, colors, shapes, sizes, you name it. Things are constantly changing within our industry.
You mentioned new plants. What shrubs or hedges are new and different that provide privacy around homes or for larger windows? What would you suggest?
I really like using ornamental grasses. There's a wide variety of evergreens that work well. So you've got arborvitaes, junipers, even yews work well for that year-round privacy.
And how far away do you plant them away from the house? Do you have any good, like, rule of thumb at all?
So you want to be familiar with the size of the plant at maturity. Mm-hmm. So every plant grows to a different size. You know, some plants might be 6 to 8 foot in spread and 6 to 8 tall. Some might be a little bit narrower, like 2 to 3 foot in spread. So you just want to make sure that you're far enough away from each plant themselves and your foundation or a fence, garage, whatever you're trying to gain privacy from.
And then, you know, what about eco-friendly? You mentioned native plants. How can people make their landscape more environmentally friendly?
Just choosing plants that require less maintenance.
So, and in terms of water and irrigation, what is new on that front? I mean, because there are irrigation systems now that water your plants when needed. Are those worthwhile? Do they lower your water consumption?
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, technology is changing. There's apps and new controllers that really do just give the plants or the lawn water when it needs it. So it keeps track of, you know, what's happening in the area, when it's supposed to rain, and it waters accordingly.
How do you suggest using wood chips and mulch in landscaping projects?
I prefer wood chips and mulch just from a plant sake. You know, the plants like the nutrients. The mulch keeps the soil cool, and it keeps the moisture in. You just want to make sure that, you know, you're only applying every second or third year, not really applying every year, because you might end up with a buildup of organic material against your foundation or your siding. So you just want to keep an eye on that, or pull back the mulch from your edges, away from the house, away from your edging or your lawn. Sometimes if you're refreshing over, you know, a course of many years, you might have to actually remove a little bit of the mulch. My favorite mulches are cedar or a hardwood shredded mulch, just because they are organic.
Mm-hmm. How do you gauge the quality of a mulch?
Yeah, that's a great question. So gauge quality just by where we're getting our mulch from. So whether it's locally, I like getting, you know, mulch locally where I know that the grinding and everything is taking place, and that it is a true hardwood or a true cedar material.
Kyle Kranches with us, leads the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association, as we discuss springtime planting, how to design outdoor green spaces. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about spring landscaping tips and how to repair signs of damage to grass and plants that occur in winter months. Be part of this conversation about outdoor living spaces. Call in with a question. You can share your comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kyle Kranches heads the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association and co-owns a landscaping company in the village of Black Creek. Kyle, you've been talking about how some of your favorite projects include both water and fire features. How are people integrating water and fire in their yards?
Yeah, it might be just a simple paver or concrete patio with a fire pit that's either wood burning, natural gas, or propane. So it just starts with a design or an idea and expands from there.
And spring and early summer typically is Wisconsin's wildfire season. How safe are fire features?
Yeah, so obviously wood burning, need to be much more attent and aware of the conditions. The gas fire features, the nice thing is there's a thermal co-pilot within them. So if it's windy and whatnot, the gas feature will go out automatically or will not start as well. So a little bit of a built-in feature with that. But yes, definitely got to be aware of the conditions.
And certainly situating them with kind of concerns as well about where your neighbor's property is as well, so they don't get a burst of the fire when on their property as well.
Yeah, definitely. So you want to be away from your trees, your neighboring properties. You want to know the prevailing winds. Just be aware and also think of that prior to the implementation or installation of a fire pit or fire feature.
There's an estimate from Statistica that says nearly 60% of fire pit owners have a classic version. What would qualify as a classic fire pit look?
I think a classic fire pit look is just a simple metal ring inserted within a patio. This ring could have a metal cover. Also, a classic look might be a tumbled wall block, stone with a metal liner that's, 12 to 16 inches above a patio in height. I think that's a classic look.
And some hardware stores will sell these kits, these fire pit kits. Do these kits typically include everything you need for a project like this?
What I'm aware and know, most of the kits do include everything that you may need for the fire pit itself. It's going to include a ring, probably some concrete adhesive, concrete block. What it's not going to include is the base material. So that would be like clear gravel or material underneath used to support or be that base for the concrete block and fire pit ring itself.
When you talk about gravel and base, I want to talk about some issues with patio pavers and walkways. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see when trying to create like these stepping stone paths and these little walkways?
I think the biggest mistake is, either putting the stepping stones right on the existing subsoil or topsoil. Not stripping the topsoil and putting a gravel or an aggregate underneath these stepper paths.
And so is there a way to fix that? I mean, you can take your pavers out, I would imagine, and start start over, but is there a way to fix these mistakes when you see a customer who's has tried to do it themselves?
You know, there really is no easy solution for it. You know, the best way to get that walkway or that stepper path to be of good quality or to be uniform and level is to start with the base prep. So it would be removing the existing walkway or the stepper path and starting with that base.
Are there any particular types of material that you like to work with for these stone walkways?
I like natural stone. Mm-hmm. Just the randomness to it. Natural stone is my favorite, but otherwise there's, you know, concrete pavers, pavers that could be are large and can be used for steppers or not put together tight, just for a random path through your garden, your planting bed.
And when you're stripping that area and making it level or trying to make it a slope, a more gradual slope, how do you ensure that, what are some of the best tools for doing that?
So some of the best tools are going to be just a simple spade shovel, edging shovel, or a rake. You're going to need like a wheelbarrow or a tarp possibly. So.
Okay. Kyle Kranches with us, co-owns a landscaping company in north central Wisconsin, as we talk about how to design and create outdoor landscaping projects. You can join in with your questions, your comments at any point at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Do you have any tips as we talk about putting in pavers? Do you have any tips for making sure that water drains away from the house?
Yeah, definitely. So, like, our company will use lasers or technology like that, but a simple homeowner can use a level. You're going to want to make sure that you have at least a quarter bubble or an inch of pitch per 4 feet for a slope away from a foundation or a structure.
Inch of pitch per 4 feet, and using a level is a good way to really see that you're doing that.
Yeah, because the level, I call it a quarter bubble of pitch. So the bubble is going to be on the side of the line closest to the house. And if you were to lift that level up on the slope away from the house, it's most likely going to be about an inch above the material that you're putting in. So that's just a general rule of thumb. That's about a 2% slope. Depending on what material you're putting in, you can get away with less than that. But kind of just a good rule of thumb if you're working around a foundation is to have a 2% slope away.
If you're working around a foundation, what are some good materials to use that will keep that slope in place and you're not having to redo a project like this?
So the materials that we use, we call it a hybrid base. So we're using 3/4 clear gravel at a depth of, between 6 inches and a foot, depending on the application. And then we screed or level off like a 5/16 or a 3/8 inch clear chip that creates like a bedding layer. And with screeding it off, it gives you a flat surface to start laying your material, whether it's paving or it's natural stone.
Okay, and so that really gives you a solid basis then to work from. In terms of some overhead cover pergolas, what do you suggest for creating shade on the landscape?
Yeah, so I really like using pergolas to create shade on landscape areas, whether it's patios, outdoor kitchen areas, cedar structures, or like a vinyl structure. Vinyl can be a little bit more, it could be less maintenance, I guess, versus cedar. Cedar is something that may take maintenance. If you want it to gray out naturally, you can leave it, or you could stain that material. So it's really up to the look that you're looking for.
The vinyl won't warp, will it?
A lot of vinyl products have an aluminum material within it. So it's basically aluminum with vinyl as kind of a wrap or a look on the outside. So typically vinyl does not warp.
Kyle Kranches is president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association, co-owns a landscaping company in Outagamie County. You can be part of the discussion along the way. Call in with a question, share comments about landscaping, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore ideas for spring landscaping projects and what might grow best for plants and shrubs in your situation, considering sunlight and soil conditions, water. Call in with a question. You can add your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kyle Kranches is with us, president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association and co-owner of a landscape company in Northeast Wisconsin. Let's take a call now. Christina in Glenwood. Christina, hi. What is your situation?
Hi there. Thank you. We've got a patio that's 35 feet by 35 feet currently with pavers, and we have to weed eat it because the weeds grow through. So what we're wondering if we should have that just redone, or if there are benefits to concrete. And also, we would like to install a hot tub. So that's a consideration.
Christina, thank you for the call. Kyle, what would you suggest first about those weeds?
About the weeds? Yeah. So it's quite a large patio. A lot of new technology with different sands that can go between the paver joints. That don't allow weeds or like ants to grow through them. So I would start with, you know, looking into what is between the paver joints first and kind of going from there.
Did you say different sands that can suppress the growth of weeds?
Correct. The sands are polymeric. So there's polymers within the sands that lock the sands. It almost creates a mortar-like joint, but it is flexible.
Okay, so flexible sands. And what is your take on if you would add a hot tub to that space?
That would depend on what the base is like underneath the paver patio. So if there is enough base material to support that. Otherwise, concrete surface works well for hot tubs and supporting hot tubs with the weight.
Okay, and so in terms of that weight, you really need to know what your base is and how much that base can support. How do you go about discerning that?
So you can kind of disassemble a small area and kind of pull up a few of the pavers. Right now, with the sounds of that weeds are kind of coming through this patio, I'm thinking that there isn't a polymeric sand, so it should be kind of simple to remove a few pavers, could dig down with a shovel, see how much base material is underneath there, kind of what the condition of the base material is, if it's loose or if it's pretty well compacted. That's how I would start that process.
Christina, does that help?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you for calling in, Christina. Rachel emailed and says that they're looking to remulch their landscaping this spring. And Rachel wants to know, when is the best time to do this, Kyle? And wants to avoid harming any new growth, but is looking to keep out weeds and overgrowth.
Yeah, everybody kind of wants to get a jump on that before the plants are too large.
We see the mountains of mulch in people's driveways, right? And they're like, oh, they've got their mountain.
Oh, definitely. I know from a retail standpoint, you know, we're always getting calls for deliveries of mulch. So it's, you know, there's a fine line where you want to get it on before the plants are, you know, at their full size for the year, but yet you don't want to put it on too early where you might stunt some of their growth. So yeah, it's kind of a short window depending on the temperatures and how fast spring comes on. So there's really no good answer for that, unfortunately, but there is a window. You don't really want to suffocate your plants, but you do want to get it on before they're at their mature size for the season.
Should we rake out or remove the old mulch before putting down new mulch?
So that really kind of depends on the thickness or the layer of mulch that is existing. So I like to install mulch like every other year or every third year, because by that point it's mostly broken down. It's kind of into that organic matter, almost like a soil substance at that point. I do suggest like taking a rake, like a steel rake, and going around your bed edges or like your concrete or your foundation around your house, just pulling that mulch back so that way it doesn't build up. And a lot of times when you pull that mulch and move it around, it's going to, you know, break up quicker and not be a thick layer on those outside edges of your beds.
That's what I was wondering. How much of a layer of mulch do you suggest?
So if it's a brand new planting bed, I recommend a layer of between 3 to 4 inches to help with that weed suppression. If it's an existing bed, I recommend like 1.5 inches, maybe a 2-inch covering. It's pretty tough to install mulch any thinner than that. So, yeah, that 1.5 to 2 inches for top dressing and 3 to 4 inches for a new bed.
Kyle Kranches with us leads the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association as we discuss designing and creating outdoor landscaping projects. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Kyle, you say hillsides that incorporate stone and plants are common landscaping project for your company. Can you share some examples of what you've done?
Yeah, so examples would be just a hillside could be anything between 3 to 4 feet, or it could be 30 to 40 foot in difference in grade. So everybody determines that differently. Every property is different. So some of the smaller hillsides might be it's something that's just not easy to maintain or mow. So we put plants that do well with holding soil in place, and then we shelf in what I call outcropping stones as kind of accents. And it just helps, you know, stabilize those soils so that way they don't erode.
What are some examples of plants that help stabilize the soil and keep that hillside in place?
Yeah, so there's a lot of plants that do well in those conditions. Some might be dogwoods or sumacs. There's actually a few varieties of roses that do well. There's some creeping junipers from a perennial side. There's phlox.
I'm familiar with, like, the knockout roses in full sun. What if the hillside doesn't get that much sun? What do you suggest?
I would suggest something in the honeysuckle or sumac family for something that doesn't get a lot of sun.
And in terms of like a tree that is also along that slope, how do you work around tree roots and like, you know, say that you do have a large or semi-large tree in that area?
Yeah, so trees do a really good job on hillsides just because their roots can grow out, spread out. So you don't want to work within, say, the drip line. So when you look up, if you're underneath a tree, you what I call a drip line is like, where does the branching or the leaves end? Where does that stop? So if you are working, you know, around a tree or a tree on a hillside, you know, you can fence off that drip line so that way you're not running equipment or putting or damaging those roots potentially.
Okay. Let's bring in Shannon in Oshkosh. Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
What would you like to bring up?
Yes. Before, a question was about environmentally friendly landscaping, and he mentioned that it's to start with low-maintenance plants, but I wanted to expand upon that today we really need people to focus on bringing native plants back to the landscape. We're losing a lot of species, a lot of insects, like monarch butterflies and bumblebees, and when you put those plants in, they're specialists. They actually need those native plants in order to survive. And there's so much lawn landscaping nowadays, there's just not enough of them. So if more people are planting native plants, it really helps to support those species and bring back our native species and our native birds and the whole ecosystem.
What are your favorite native plants to put in the landscape?
Yeah, it depends on what you have. If you have more shade, you might want to go for like springy ephemerals, like wild geraniums and Jack in the Pulpit and May apples and wild ginger. And there's a huge list. If you have more sunny area, you'd want to go for more like coreopsis and coneflowers. There's different kinds of coneflowers. There's different kinds of goldenrod, not Canada goldenrod though. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. There are literally dozens, actually well over 100 species to choose from. I'm actually a member of a group called Wild Ones. There's a local chapter in the Fox Valley chapter Wild Ones. You can find them online. They provide free information and free mentoring. People want to get started and learn how to prepare their land and to select plants that would work well with their land. And lots of resources there. There's programs and tours and all sorts of things.
It's called Wild Ones, you said?
Yes, Wild Ones. Our chapter is 30 years old.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Shannon, for bringing that. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
And Kyle, in terms of native plants, you also mentioned grasses. What sorts of grasses would be best for, you know, like bees and other insects?
There's many different types of grasses. I'm drawing a mind blank off of hand. But,
that's okay.
I like switchgrasses.
Kyle Cranches with us heads up the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association as we explore ideas for spring landscape design, making the most of outdoor spaces, and keeping in mind those native plants. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to liven up spring landscaping and explore your plans for shrubs and flower beds, for hardscaping. Call in with a question. You can share your comments about outdoor spaces, 800-642-1234. Kyle Cranches is president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association. Marie in Sheboygan is here. Hi, Marie.
Hello. How are you today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I wanted to just pursue the previous comment from the woman from Sheboygan. Thank you so much. That you're not going to find natives at your big box stores. You're going to need to go to a garden center. But my question is, because you specifically have to ask for natives, but what is his thought on native trees such as mulberries and witch hazel trees? I mean, are those good for the landscape?
Marie, thank you. Kyle.
Definitely. Thanks for bringing up that question. So mulberry trees are great. Witch hazels, we plant a lot of witch hazels. Um, So yeah, I think it's a very underused tree shrub. But yes, if you have the space within your landscape, definitely would recommend witch hazel.
What are the water needs of witch hazel?
Witch hazels can kind of adapt, but they're kind of known for being understory. So yeah, they are going to need adequate water. You're not going to want to really put them in a full sun location per se. So partial shade or understory would be a great place for a witch hazel.
And what about the nuances of mulberries?
Not too familiar with the mulberries per se, but yeah.
So in terms of the lighting of the outdoor spaces, you've seen a lot of change in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi systems. What do people want?
It's really a personal preference. If they prefer just a system that does not have an app feature, or if they like the Bluetooth, Wi-Fi technology is kind of great for the installer aspect, because then these systems are connected to the cloud and we can maintain or check up on these systems via the cloud without having to be on site.
I'm noticing also solar-powered lighting emerging. Is that a good viable alternative to traditional, like, hardwired lighting? What do you notice on that front?
You know, I know people have the solar. Yes, solar lights are great. We don't do any installations of solar systems. But, yeah, so I know they are, you know, gaining traction and popular. And really the sole focus for lighting is to create function and kind of have that security.
And you say that low voltage lighting systems are fun to install because they create function and security. What is a low voltage lighting system?
So a low voltage lighting system is a transformer or controller that's just plugged into an outdoor outlet. And then from that transformer controller, you have wires, low voltage or direct burial wire that goes to each fixture. The fixtures could be anything from a path light, a well light, a wash light does a good job of, you know, bringing subtle light to a masonry or brick on the front of a home. An up light or an accent light could be used to uplight that specimen tree. Say you've got, you know, a tree or a crabapple tree within your landscape. You could uplight that. So yeah, there's a lot of different components to a low voltage lighting system.
Do you have any like suggestions at where we should put outdoor lighting? I mean, you just mentioned a lot of different places. What should be a priority for outdoor lighting?
It really, you know, start with creating function. So illuminating paths or just areas where you're walking. So that way, you know, it's just creating that safe, functional environment.
What are the landscaping projects that add the most significant value to a home?
I think a planting bed that creates curb appeal, that kind of gives that low maintenance vibe. All landscaping does require maintenance, but a proper designed landscape is relatively low maintenance, and it's just got curb appeal, a nice front walkway that maybe has some curves to it versus straight angles, and then a nice patio space in the back for a table with chairs and whatnot.
Do you have any tips on building raised beds and incorporating them into the landscape so they're incorporated and they don't just stand out?
Yeah, so, you know, it's all about that idea or that vision. So you want to kind of use material that is within your landscaping now. You know, okay. Something that might not stand out would be the use of natural stone products and concrete product if you have, you know, a concrete patio or a paver patio surface. Sometimes timbers or a wood material stands out, but, you know, in the right application, it's nice to have that contrasting material as well. So it really is, you know, what does that landscape look like? What is the vision for that landscape?
How do you prepare that area for a raised bed?
So we prepare that area the same way as if we were preparing a retaining wall.
Ah.
So we're going to excavate down and we're going to put clear stone and we're going to at least bury one course of block for stability. And then we're going to work our way up.
Let's bring in Andrea in Madison. Andrea, hi.
Hello. I wanted to comment on the mulberry question. Don't plant the common mulberry, Morris alba, that is on the restricted species list because it's very invasive. It also produces a whole lot of pretty insipid purple berries that, while the birds love them, they also poop them out a lot, and mm-hmm. you get a lot of staining. Instead, I would recommend the native pagoda dogwood. That has four seasons of interest, beautiful form, looks layered. It's really quite pretty. It has flowers in the spring that look like Queen Anne's lace, blue berries on magenta stems in the midsummer, and it has good fall color too, dark reds.
So you get some interest all year long on that pagoda dogwood.
Oh, yeah, and it's really popular with the wildlife. I enjoy watching the small mammals like chipmunks climbing and doing acrobatics, and I get birds here on that come in for this tree alone. I never see them any other time, like great crested flycatchers. Who would have thought? But they make the trip.
Oh, Andrea, thank you so much for bringing that information. Appreciate it. Kyle, in our last few moments together, you know, No Mow May is right around the corner, and that movement encourages people to avoid mowing their lawn all month long to support those pollinators. Do you have tips on carrying out landscape projects while still respecting the return of lawn and grass areas?
Yeah, I think it's all, you know, it's great to do the No Mow May. I know I participate within that. So it's just, you know, making sure that you're respecting the plants or what you have blooming within the yard to bring in those pollinators.
Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kyle Kranches is president of the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.